on the Richie Allen Show. Let's welcome Tony Gosling to the programme. Thank God, Tony. How are you? Where are you?
I'm in Lisbon, Richie, and I'm not used to spending all day on my feet with a camera, but I've just done that and taken pictures of lots of people coming into the Bilderberg conference, got shouted at by the police for the benefit of the conference organiser lady who came out for 5 minutes, and the police sort of suddenly turn on the photographers for a little while to impress the organisers, and then they're quite friendly again after the organisers have gone back inside.
Thanks for taking the time out to come on with us. I really appreciate it, pal. We go back a long time. I know you're busy. I know you're knackered. You're covering the 2023 annual Bilderberg Conference in Lisbon. If you want to give a 90-second, the most basic description of what Bilderberg is, because there will be people listening for the first time who might be wondering, what's all the fuss about? What is Bilderberg?
Well, it's the secret government of the NATO countries, really. They're... job is to groom and choose politicians in the NATO countries. It was set up by the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, and the Council on Foreign Relations during World War II. And at the end of the war, they decided that they needed a political conference where they could size up potential leaders for the European countries. They were very concerned at the time about making sure that Europe didn't become friendly with the Soviet Union, especially since Italy and other countries, Greece, etc., were veering towards becoming communists. So they've been going ever since, Richie, and they're here now in a capacity of Henry Kissinger, who's been one of their main figures right throughout this whole time, the ex-Secretary of State in the US. He's just about to turn 100.
He's about to turn 100 and he's there again. And you've been out photographing and filming. Who else is there? Who's expected to be there this weekend, Tony? Give us an idea.
Okay, well, I'll tell you just perversely, you know, because I love to do this to you, to somebody who has just arrived in Lisbon, who is not on the guest list, is Yuval Noah Harari.
Ah, right, yeah.
So, of course, they put these guest lists out. And I can remember years ago covering this in the 1990s in Scotland. Tony Blair was there because I spoke to the lady that served him breakfast, but he wasn't on the official list. So this is the game they play with us. So they have all these people, including we've got two European prime ministers in there, two deputy prime ministers. We've got something like five or six foreign ministers, including the Ukrainian foreign minister. And yet, to have Harari going in to speak to him, we've got the Secretary General of NATO in there. They've got the boss of Goldman Sachs. They've got the bosses of, or close to the top people, one of the top advisors for BP, boss of Shell. They've got the Total bosses. I mean, these are all the people who have been creaming it off, of course, with the massive rise in the price of, I think it's now $70 billion that BP and Shell together are making in profit every year. So those are the people who are in there. And I think the main take home from looking at the list when it was released about 11 a.m. this morning is it's very heavy on European politicians. So, you know, for example, we've had Jens Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO. We saw him come out to go to a conference with the Portuguese Prime Minister, who is not in the conference. And in fact, I think there is a definite separation between the NATO edge of the conference and the Portuguese government, who do not wish to necessarily be associated with the Bilderbergs and their position on Ukraine. So Stoltenberg had to actually come out in a cavalcade with these, you know, blue flashing motorbike outriders to go and visit the guy from the Portuguese Prime Minister and then go back in later. At least I was leaving just as they were expecting him to come back. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that's going on here, power plays, and they will be most definitely focusing on what's happening in Ukraine. I've no doubt of that, although it'll probably be at the bottom of the official list on the agenda.
Well, right, that's interesting. We'll come back to what might be at the top of the list. And by the way, any time you've got to leg it, don't worry about that. I'm glad to get a few minutes with you. So you mentioned this guy, Yuval Noah Harari, big World Economic Forum guy, big tech guy. We've talked quite a bit about him on the program. Somebody said to me once some years ago, they said, Richie, Bilderberg, if you dilute it down, it's fairly simple to understand. It's where elected officials, the people we think are in charge but who are not really in charge, it's where they go to meet the paymasters, the globalists and the big bankers, to be told what to do and to be told what's coming next in the agenda. Is that too simplistic, Tony?
No, it's not. It's pretty accurate. I mean, my colleague Martin Summers does my radio show every Friday with me, pretty much every Friday. He describes it as like, I think it's a great description, like a horse fair, where the owners of the capital, the owners of our world, the banksters maybe, mainly, and of course their military friends, take a look at these politicians, you know, sort of, you know, pull their teeth out, gums sideways, have a look at their teeth, you know, look at their fetlocks, you know, are these the right people that we want to be in charge? And I'd be honest with you, over the years, we have had a modicum of democracy in Europe. We certainly did have when Britain had a mixed economy in the 1970s, for example, where the infrastructure was in public hands, run in public, for the public, more or less at cost. But now these finance capitalists have pretty much taken over so much of the property around us and the infrastructure. We're now in the situation where I think they can pretty much guarantee that their people will be in power in all countries, all the European countries pretty much now. I mean, there are one or two exceptions, like the Portuguese, who are pushing back a bit against the Ukraine war, etc. But largely, this is a military alliance. It's an anti-Russian alliance. It's a very much a pro-US alliance. And the actual direction of it seems to be towards more and more control. And they seem to have that control pretty much now, Richie, of many of our senior politicians, the people that make the appointments into the security services, things like that, are now almost all in Bilderberg's hands. And that's what they've achieved over, well, since they had their very first meeting in 1954 in Holland at the Oosterbeek, Bilderberg Hotel in Oosterbeek, which was where the Battle of Arnhem was fought in World War II, the Bridge Too Far film. They've been going ever since, and they've slowly but surely inched into. Now, also very important fact, one of the things that really got me kind of riled and made me decide in the 1990s to pursue these people was for the first 20 years, from the mid-50s to the mid-1970s, Bilderberg was chaired by a former SS officer.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, yeah. Tony Gosling is in Lisbon. This is massive news, this. This is where Martin's... I didn't know Martin had characterised Bilderberg in the way that you described. Horse fair. It's brilliant. It really is brilliant. Where the owners of everything go to look the politicians in the mouth, in the eyes, in the teeth, to see if they're, you know, going to play ball, if they're the right ones for the next steps of the agenda. Now, you said that Ukraine and Russia might be down near the bottom of the agenda. What's at the top of the agenda for these people, do you think, this year?
Well, AI is big there. There's lots of technology companies. There's Alex Karp is in there from Palantir. Peter Thiel, who funded and owned PayPal and also helped Alex Karp get Palantir going. Now, a lot of people don't understand what Palantir is. It's a kind of interface between a sort of digital game world and databases and the real world. So, for example, Palantir admitted at Christmas to be using their AI to help target the Russians in Ukraine. So the idea is that you've got the satellites are looking for things, finding things. It's AI looking for them, not even, you know, any human beings involved. And then they're sending messages saying, right, here's something that looks interesting, blow it up. And, of course, this is why you've got various figures. One of them is in there now. His name escapes me. He wrote a piece in The Guardian on Tuesday. Well, there's a piece about him anyway, because he was speaking in Congress, explaining how, AI is so dangerous. You know, we must do something about it. And this is the trick that they use. And, of course, Henry Kissinger is the person who probably most people will understand has been doing this for years. So he's been, even back in the 1950s, he wrote all the books on nuclear war and the dangers of it. And yet here he is, and he has been doing for years, as we know about, particularly in South America and Indonesia and Cyprus, been creating the wars. So what they do is they create the problems, and then they also proffer their own special experts, like Yuval Noah Harari, as the people to have the solutions. Now, there is, we could talk about 1,000 different things, but let's just look at the economic crisis So we've got rising inflation. So they decide to put up interest rates. Well, that's going to make things worse.
Yeah.
So we've got a COVID problem. So let's have a vaccine. Well, that's going to make things worse. You know, we've got a migrant crisis. Let's have a some put Suella Braverman on the job and various people. And now we've got a million, they think, net coming in a year. So they haven't succeeded at all. So the, you know, the idea is to create these various crises and put their people forward. Often their own special experts, particularly with AI, this applies. And so that's why I think that's probably what's going to be at the top of this, because it's been so much in the news recently. Although of course Ukraine is much more important to them. And so there is a philosophy behind this. There's a pattern to this behaviour, and it's known as accelerationism. The idea, and of course you hear Larry Fink and, you know, the boss of BlackRock and people like that using this term again and again, more and more people. Actually, that's what they're doing. They're accelerating a sort of multi-cluster crisis of various different sorts to put pressure on, psychological pressure. In fact, in many ways, it's subconscious pressure on everybody, and including the politicians and the media people. In order to do, I suppose, what we're looking at in the future is an omni-crisis of some kind, where a bit like Naomi Klein's shock doctrine, so everything kind of comes to a head, and then they can get the changes they want. Now, those changes, central bank digital currency, obviously,
yeah.
They want to have big geopolitical changes as well. So they want, you know, to force Britain back into the single market, for example, so that we then have to go underneath the you know, European Court of Justice laws. All of the trade laws become run by Brussels, not by UK anymore, and we get this kind of half-baked Brexit. And that's the sort of thing that they're up to, Richie. They're very much involved with the build-up of the European Union. This is one of the reasons I was so pro-Brexit, you know, because I could see these people are trying to create a United States of Europe, and they've pretty much succeeded in doing that. And just finally, I will say, Brexit, of course, isn't really happening. You know, much of it is just tokenism.
Agreed, yeah.
So what's that all about? You know, a token Brexit? They had Karl von Habsburg on the this is way back. This is just before, I think it was 2019, when we had that general election that Boris won to get Brexit done, supposedly. And he said, this is so entertaining. He said, I've actually started watching my TV again, because it's like a reality TV show, watching these people try to have Brexit, because I know they will never do it and that they can't do it. And it's actually quite entertaining watching them try.
And lying to their electorate and saying that it's done. I got Brexit done. I got it over the line when they didn't. There was obviously an announcement yesterday from the World Meteorological Organization that the 1.5 degree threshold that we're supposed to avoid at all costs will be reached sooner rather than later, and therefore we need to expedite the way we change our behaviours and all of that. Do you think that climate will be on the agenda this weekend?
Almost certainly, and of course that's another crisis I didn't mention. You know, this is the you know, I think that there are real problems with the climate. Of course there are, but this is way exaggerated. This is a similar sort of situation to COVID. Yes, some people were dying of this genetically modified coronavirus this into the sort of SARS, you know, SARS pattern, and also the protocols which were forced by the insurance companies onto the hospitals. And a lot of people were dying because they weren't appropriate for SARS. So, you know, they had that. But climate, oh, it definitely will be there. And this is a major, major tool. I mean, it was just listening to the news again this morning. They've said, you know, they're saying that every kind, basically every flood, every cyclone is because of climate change. And this is actually hardwired now into the narrative on all across the mainstream press in the West. Every time that there is some sort of, and of course they're on a winner there, every time, because they know there's going to be these natural disasters of various sorts, and actually some of them are just a hurricane, they're just nothing to do with climate change, they're just a hurricane, but they try and pin it onto everything, pretty much every type of, you know, storm.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what happens.
Of mud.
Yeah,
and, you know, for example, I'm very close to the Somerset Levels, which is low-lying land south of Bristol. Not right now, but, you know, and when that all happened, we went down to have a look, and you could see that they hadn't drained the drainage ditches, and the Environment Agency's sluice gates, which are supposed to let the water from the levels out into the sea, were closed. You know, so no wonder you got floods. So there is a definite, you know, exaggeration of all of this. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be doing stuff about pollution. Of course we should. But we've been made dependent on the car. Just coming around here in Lisbon, it's very busy, you know, a lot of cars everywhere. But we had in the 1980s a brilliant system Ken Livingstone brought in London, which was bringing down the bus fares. People started selling their cars, not just leaving them at home. And we had a 1,000 in, I think it was 1985, we had 1,500 less serious accidents on the road. So that's the way. If you want to get rid of cars, bring back affordable, reliable public transport, and everyone will start using it.
Well said. Give people the choice, but don't force them into it. I'll let you go in 2 minutes. I know you've got plenty more people who want to talk to you, and I want to know if you're going to be on air tomorrow. I'm sure you will be. Tell us this. I can only imagine the security is huge, is it?
Well, there's a couple of layers of security. Actually, it's been quite entertaining watching some of the Bilderbergers getting in, and they haven't got quite the right credentials. So they stood there, and of course the photographers then sort of fan out around them, click, 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 click. We can get much more chance of getting in. But there's a lot of them are coming in these large, they're kind of minibuses with all blacked out at the back, so you can't see anything in there. A lot of them are managing to get in. So the security has been obviously pretty tight. They've just actually, funnily enough, if you want to get on a, I think it's a 285 bus, you can go right past the entrance that the photographers aren't even.
Is that right? Get on that bus.
One of the buses is right past the main entrance. And also, there's a garden as part of the hotel, which has been really funny. We've been watching some of the Bilderbergers on their phones, wandering out and sort of seeing, well, what's over here? And as they poke their heads over the balustrade and the garden and look down and then click, 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 we get them, you know. I shouted out at Mark Carney as he walked past.
Carney
to get
there,
him to
is
turn
he?
Around for, shouted out to him, hi, Mark. And I said, and then he didn't turn around. I said, well, don't you know your name? One of the policemen was laughing, right? So, you know, it's the place to be, I think. You know, it's one of the most important decision-making centres in the world. And they're all here. You know, all of the evildoers, and I would say most definitely evil now. If you look at what the British
are
doing,
evil,
sending depleting uranium munitions, Ben Wallace and Tom Tugendhat, he's in here, the security, UK security minister. It is absolutely evil sending these DU munitions, because what it's going to do is it's going to leave congenital birth defects for something like 40, 50 generations of Ukrainians as they start to fire this stuff. That dust gets into the ground, it gets into the food, it gets into the water, and you start having these weird, horrible, horrifying, horrific birth defects. And that's what these guys are up to. Particularly the Brits have been absolutely appalling in all that, Richie.
Let's remember a couple of people. Robert Fisk, of course, who wrote about the depleted uranium, I think Fallujah. Robert used to come on with me all the time. Great, great, great writer. And let's also remember somebody that you introduced me to 12 or 13 or 15 years. It must be 15 years ago. I was looking for a guest about Bilderberg, and you'd spoken to me. I was on the radio in Spain, and you introduced me. I'm sure it was you, T. You introduced me to the late, great Jim Tucker, would you believe?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's well. I can remember back in sort of the 2000s. He was a great guy to have, because he would turn up. He was very professional about the way he did things, a sort of old-fashioned newspaper journalist type from the United States. And he'd worked in the mainstream press, and he'd actually had to go and work for this Spotlight magazine, so the only people that would take him doing the stories. So in fact, there was C. Gordon Tether in the Financial Times who wrote about Bilderberg in his Lombard column in the Financial Times. He was booted out of his job because he insisted on writing about Bilderberg. That's how serious these people are. And Jim used to turn up 2 or 3 days before the conference. He'd go and have a chit chat, you know, very friendly American fashion with the staff. He'd always be able to identify 2 or 3 of the staff who might be friendly to the reporting on it. And then sometimes during the conference, and most definitely after the conference, he would have these little soirees with the staff and pick up a fantastic amount of information. I mean, that was where, I'm pretty sure it was 2002, he came back out of the conference saying, well, one of the staff says they're talking about attacking Iraq.
Yeah, that's right.
That was 2002.
Yeah.
So anyway, Jim did a fantastic job on that, Richie. I'm glad you managed to speak to him before he passed away. Yeah,
I did. Well, it was down to you. You made the connection. Right, thanks for coming on. Will not the BCFM Politics Show, will it be live tomorrow at 5?
Well, we're certainly hoping so, thisweek.org.uk. And I'm doing my best to do short interviews with some of the people who've made the effort to come down here to report on it. There's one guy I've just been interviewing from Costa Rica, who spent many years in California. He's come over specially to report on them and do a mini documentary.
Well, listen, good luck with it, pal. Have a good weekend there. And thanks for sparing the time for us today. It means the world to me. Well done, T. Thank you.
Okay, well, I'll just say, please do, if you can, put a link up on your show to the Bilderberg list, because it's a fascinating thing to go through. Almost everybody that goes through it gets something different from it. You know, I've just mentioned a few of the specific individuals from the UK. David Lammy from the Labour Party's there. He's obviously been groomed for power. Once Starmer conks out, and Wes Streeting and the rest of them, but Lammy's in there. And it's important, I think, for people to all have a look at that and take what you can from it, because I don't think anyone can really define what these people are, but they're bringing together a lot of different areas of very important parts of public life and the future and banking. And I suppose, can I finish on this? The banking side of it is the worst, really, because when you've got people like Harari hanging around in town, even though he's not officially on the list, he's the guy that's spelling out, hey, these are the problems that are coming up in the future. But the trouble is, the banks, this is a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. The bankers look at this and then they say, hey, well, this is what we'll fund if this is where things are going. And so what they're doing is they're creating our future in there by talking about the way they want the world to go, the way they think the world is going, and the money then follows that, because the bankers think that this is the best investment to do. And the politicians, really, they stand at the back, they watch all this, and they've got nothing to say. Nothing to say.
And no power. That list will be on the podcast notes, Tony, for this programme. So Godspeed to you, pal. Speak next week, and thanks again for everything that you're doing there.
The
absolutely brilliant Tony Gosling, live on Thursday's Richie Allen Show. One of the few journalists left in the world, let alone in the UK, doing his job there. Those notes, the podcast notes, will contain, at the bottom of the notes, will contain the link to the list of the Bilderberg attendees.